Welcome, Pewter Report readers and listeners, to another edition of the Pewter Nation podcast. My name is Trevor Sikkema.
You're not Mark Cook.
You're right. I'm not Mark Cook. I was going to say, with me is Mr. Scott Reynolds. Scott, we are coming to you live. Just kidding. It's not going to be live by the time you listen to this. From Mobile, Alabama.
We are here live, though.
Because.
Yes.
It's draft season.
Yeah.
It's draft season, and that's why we're here. We're here in Mobile, Alabama for the 2018 Senior Bowl. I'm excited.
It's going to be a good week, and the thing I love about draft season, Trevor, is you have the East-West Shrine and the Senior Bowl back-to-back. So for draft nicks like you and I, we get to see all sorts of college prospects, draft prospects, if you will, guys that start off maybe in day three, maybe some day two guys in the East-West Shrine,
right,
kind of as an appetizer.
Right.
Then we go into really the guys that are day two,
the
day
meat
one
and potatoes,
guys.
Right?
First-round prospects. And the Buccaneers have done a good job of mining the Senior Bowl last year, getting O.J. Howard, who started this game last year, your first Senior Bowl here in attendance.
Yep.
You saw what he was able to do. Dirk Cutter, Jason Light sitting there watching O.J. just abuse linebackers and safeties here at Ladd Peoples Stadium and become the Buccaneers' first-round pick. 2 years before that, it was Noah Spence right here out of Eastern Kentucky, transferred there from Ohio State. And Noah Spence was really the story of the Senior Bowl, one of those risers. And we've seen a couple of guys like that. Ziggy Ansah several years ago, Aaron Donald a few years ago in 2014, Noah Spence in 2016. And the guy that may be the riser this year, UTSA, that's University of Texas San Antonio, for those of you who don't know, the defensive end, 6'7", 255 pounds, Marcus Davenport, who we had a chance to talk to tonight at the initial press conference at the Senior Bowl.
Coming from the Roadrunners. That's UTSA, that's what their mascot is, the Roadrunner. I had looked that up when I was looking up Marcus Davenport, and there are not many, like, there's a lot of Panthers. There's bears, you know, like a lot of teams have eagles.
A lot of wildcats, a lot of tigers.
A lot of animals like that. Not a lot of roadrunners.
I only know of one.
There's only one.
UTSA.
I think there's only one. There's also, obviously, only one Marcus Davenport. He is a lot of scouts, the Buccaneers included. They're picking at number seven. Who had him at number seven in their mock draft?
Daniel Jeremiah.
From NFL Network. He had him going number seven. And we're... You know, Bucs fans, you know, we're right there with you trying to figure out who the Buccaneers are going to take with this number seven overall pick, because in a perfect world, it's Bradley Chubb. Like, they would love to take Bradley Chubb with that number seven overall pick, but at this point, that's a risk. I mean, like, there's no other way to say it. It is hard to believe that, knowing how important pass rushing is in the NFL, even if teams in front of the Buccaneers, let's say they might have already have what you would consider, I guess, established pass rushers, they even might take a look at Bradley Chubb, because the drop-off between him and the next guy,
which could be Davenport,
right, we just don't know yet. Right now, it's far and away that Chubb seems to be the top guy. Mm-hmm. Doesn't seem like he's going to make it seven, but the Buccaneers, worst pass rush team in the NFL.
Yeah.
They need something somewhere. It's likely that the free agents aren't really going to pan out. So at that point, they've got to look for somebody. And Marcus Davenport might be that somebody.
Right. And the thing too, Trev, is when you look at the Bucs roster right now, you've got Will Golston, who was re-signed, strictly kind of a run defender. He had 3.5 sacks the two previous years.
Contract isn't just a run defender, but...
Yeah, before the contract extension. Then last year, 0 sacks. So he's not going to help your pass rush. He's not going to be in there on third down. Noah Spence, the guy they really planned on becoming that breakthrough guy this year, didn't happen. He had the shoulder injury. Didn't have it repaired properly the first time. So he had to have the second surgery, which is more of the major surgery. He had 1 sack, which happened in the season opener for the Bucs against the Bears. The sack fumble, then he was shelved after just a couple of games.
Yep.
The Buccaneers didn't have much pass rush since then. Robert Ayers declined back to 2 sacks. He's a shell of his former self. They got to have an outside edge guy. And it's interesting because Jeremiah put Marcus Davenport in his mock draft for the Bucks at number seven. And PewterReport.com's seven-round Bucks mock draft, we had Notre Dame guard Quentin Nelson. But I wrote in there in the third paragraph, I said, I almost put University of Texas San Antonio defensive end Marcus Davenport in at number seven for Tampa Bay.
Check your seats, folks.
There is a lot to like about the 6'7", 255-pound defensive end, including 21.5 career sacks, 37.5 career tackles for loss, 8 career passes defensed, which Jason Light likes, by the way. That's a key statistic for Jason Light, mm-hmm. is passes defensed for defensive linemen, because it shows the awareness of rushing the passer. If you can't get there for the sack, get your hands up on third down, knock the pass down.
It's Danielle Hunter, right?
Yeah, exactly.
I mean, it's that's kind of I this week in my cover three, I'm really breaking down who Davenport is, the things that he does well, you know, why a guy who might go number seven overall. You know, the first question that people are probably thinking is why is a guy from UT San Antonio going to go number seven? Like, what happened to this guy? Did he transfer?
Right.
You know, what happened to him? How did he end up there?
He's a San Antonio native, so he wanted to stay home, go to a brand new program, if you will. This is a program that's been around for less than 10 years mm-hmm. from a football perspective.
Right.
And he really wanted to go there and make his mark, and he certainly has. 6 career forced fumbles, and as I go on to say, but the level of competition he faced in producing those great statistics is a concern. However, in talking to some scouts, Trevor, he's played against the likes of Kansas State, Arizona, I believe Arizona State, Baylor, Texas A&M. So he's not from a Power 5 conference, but he's played teams outside of the Power 5, from the Big 12, from the SEC, and he's done pretty well, and also from the Pac-12, and he's recorded some sacks. I asked Davenport at the initial press conference tonight about that differential and if he thought that his play against those Power 5 schools would help him out in the eyes of scouts. And he told me, he said, I don't really think so, because I don't think my level of play has dropped off from those Power 5 schools.
Well, that's good.
To the conference schools
he plays.
For
him to say that, that's good. That's what you want to hear.
Yep. And I go on to say, Davenport will be at the Senior Bowl later this month and showcase his skills, his talent in Mobile, Alabama. If he makes a splash, like former defensive linemen, including Ziggy Ansah, Aaron Donald, and Tampa Bay's own Noah Spence have in the past, his draft stock could rise within the top 10. And Daniel Jeremiah tracking right along with us, and he put Marcus Davenport there at number 7 for the Buccaneers as the second pass rusher taken in this draft behind Bradley Chubb.
He shows a lot of things that are obviously alluring, and it's somewhat of a confusing watch to his tape, at least in 2017, because normally when you're scouting a player, you want to see what they've done. You know, it's kind of like the "what have you done for me lately" thing. It's almost the opposite of, say, Arden Key, where a lot of Bucks fans are looking at that number 7 overall pick, thinking, okay, well, Bradley Chubb's not going to be there. What about Arden Key? And a lot of people are bringing his name up and continuing to tell me, you know, this is the guy, this is the guy. And Arden Key had good statistics in his freshman and sophomore year, but his final year, he wasn't the player you needed him to be, even
exactly.
beyond the injury, even beyond him missing time, blah, blah, blah. And you can go back and watch a lot of his freshman and sophomore tapes. The things that he finishes, Arden Key, it's against running backs and tight ends. You know, he has a really hard time getting off those blocks. So I say all that about Key to say that Davenport's a little bit different. His 2017 tape, he's playing a lot of stand-up linebacker, mm-hmm. and he's not going to play that. He's really going to play a 4-3 defensive end, which is what the Bucs would prefer. Now, I mean, he was asked at the introductory press conference at the beginning of the Senior Bowl, you know, how do you feel about dropping back into coverage? And obviously, you know, he's going to say,
I'm a pass rusher, though.
But he said in there, I think he slipped in the words, I'm glad that they made me the rushing outside linebacker in that 3-4. So he is truly a pass rusher. I think he is. I would lean toward him being more of a natural from that 3-4 position. And man, I gotta say, like, when you watch some of his clips, he's got a little bit of Jadeveon Clowney in him.
Yeah.
Because if he gets off that snap,
yes,
he will violent the crap out of him with his
long
hands. get with his punch.
Yes.
And there's a couple of plays where I see him, for whatever reason, they try to put him against a linebacker or they just let him block as the play's going on. And he'll get a clean shot at somebody.
Yeah.
And that's when I say I see a little bit Clowney, because he'll get shot out of a cannon and just pound somebody in the backfield. So I do see a little bit of that in his game.
Here's what I like about him. This is a guy that is a self-made man. He has gotten better every single year from his rookie or his freshman season, if you will. A modest 14 tackles, 2.5 tackles for loss, 2.5 sacks. Then you go to his sophomore year. He's got 49 tackles, 7.5 tackles for loss, 4 sacks, 2 forced fumbles, 3 passes defensed. The next year, you see more pass rush, 67 tackles, 10 tackles for loss, 6.5 sacks, a pass defense, a fumble recovery, and a forced fumble. And then this year, 55 tackles, 17.5 tackles for loss, 8.5 sacks, 4 passes defensed, 3 forced fumbles, 1 fumble recovery for a touchdown. This is a guy, Trev, whose best football is ahead of him.
Right.
He hasn't peaked yet. He's still getting better.
Yeah.
The coach at University of Texas San Antonio wanted him as a sophomore to become more violent, to become a more violent player. And what you just talked about, what you saw in that senior tape, is exactly what he's become. Did.
Yeah, no question. The tricky thing with Davenport is that the one thing still lacking in his game is the thing that you... I guess, like, it makes you nervous about a guy, because getting off blocks is the last thing that he really has to get good at. And right. I know you say his best football is in front of him, and he is still raw as a pass rusher.
Yep.
Like, they recruited, he played wide receiver in high school, right?
Yeah.
So, I mean, like, being just a big, giant athlete who now has added the violence to his game in the last 2 years, you'll notice that when he engages in blocks, you know, even he's getting good hand placement. He's violent with his hands. That's good. But the only moves that he consistently does is, like, you know, the pushback, the initial, yeah, like, I'm going to knock you back far, and right, I'm going to basically knock you into the quarterback.
Yeah.
Now, that works against the competition that UTSA normally goes up against, right?
Exactly.
It's not going to work in the NFL.
Yeah.
So you've got to...
There's no Rice's or Louisiana Tech's.
Right, in the
Marshall's
NFL.
In the NFL.
So... you like the violence, you like the punch, everything. Like, that stuff can translate plenty, but it's got to become, like, a punch. You're knocking the offensive lineman off balance, and then you club rip or something. Like,
yes,
you got to be able to get away.
Right.
And that's the thing that's the last part of his game that you really – that I'm hoping to see more of at the Senior Bowl.
Yes.
Because
– well, he's got strong, violent hands, but he's got to have quick hands to be able to shed blockers quickly.
And the problem is that you can do a lot of things – really well, and if you can't get off blocks,
that's right,
it almost all kind of, like, is for naught. And we've seen a lot of good pass rushers who have good traits, good body frame, good athleticism, even some violent hands, some violent traits here and there. If you can't get off the block, you're not going to be a good enough pass rusher to be warranted for a top 15 pick. And so that's something that
absolutely,
that we're both really looking forward to him hopefully seeing more of here at this Senior Bowl, because, and I know we've spent the majority of the podcast talking about him already, but that's the guy who he could be the impact player in the class, because
yeah,
the guy that they're going to take at number 7 is going to tell the tale, whether it's Quentin Nelson and they're going to devote themselves to, mm-hmm, that offensive line.
Or, and he's a junior, so really when we're talking about the players here at the Senior Bowl, who could be the Buccaneers' first-round pick, he's probably the only guy that I see here at this game that would fit the qualifications to be the number 7 overall pick. There's some other guys, Trev. There's Bradley Chubb, as you mentioned, who's not at this game. If he should somehow slide to number 7, you and I don't think that's going to happen, but he's a guy. Quentin Nelson from Notre Dame, the guard, is not here. He's a junior.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you wrote about Washington defensive tackle Vita Vea,
mm-hmm,
and I think that he is an outside sleeper guy. I think he's going to really wow at the combine, and at 330-plus pounds, run a 4.9 and going to blow people out of their mind with his agility and speed and strength at the combine. He could be, I believe, because of the combine, a late riser up the boards. So I think really at this game, like you said, it's Davenport for the Bucs' potential first-round pick. Now, we talked, Trevor, about hands and quickness and strength and all that. let's rewind a little bit to the East-West Shrine and focus on some of the defensive linemen we saw there, because these guys had a really good game in the East-West Shrine game. Several of those guys we watched had sacks and showed what they could do. I'm going to rattle off a couple of statistics here just to kind of paint the picture. You had North Carolina State's Kentavious Street, who played opposite of Bradley Chubb on that very talented North Carolina State defensive line.
I thought he
line.
Was certainly one of the better defensive ends during the Shrine Week.
Yeah. Polished, strong, not terribly flashy, but very workmanlike.
That's a really good way to put it, yeah.
1.5 sacks, 3 quarterback hits, a tackle for loss in that game. Also getting the quarterbacks to the ground. This is for the West team. We saw Missouri defensive end Marcel Frazier, who had some trouble with recognition, who is not the most observant and aware and instinctive player, but based upon physical ability and traits, he has them all. Mm-hmm. He had a sack and 2 quarterback hits for the West. We also got a pretty good look at SMU defensive end Justin Lawler, who had 9.5 sacks as a senior. He had a sack in that game, 2 tackles for loss, another quarterback hit. But the guy that really stood out to you and he's got kind of a weird body type, is Central Michigan's Joe Ostman, who had 6 tackles, very active. He had a sack, 2 tackles for loss, and a quarterback hit. And this is a guy that has some of the quickest hands that I've seen at the East-West Shrine game. And there's been a couple of defensive ends, Trevor, that have rolled through that game, including... I'm trying to remember who's the defensive end, kind of the nut job from the Carolina Panthers, played at Ole Miss. Greg Hardy.
Oh,
Greg Hardy rolled through the East-West Shrine game, and he was a standout guy, but his character issues,
that, by the way,
let him slip until the third day.
Should have let him slip to not being in the NFL, but go on.
Exactly, but Joe Ostman is a guy that when you look at Mike Alstott and his body type, right? Alstott was a 6-foot. Fullback for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, but had a long torso and kind of short, squatty legs. Mm-hmm. That's kind of how Ostman's built. It's a weird body type. Sometimes you see defensive ends that are 6'3 and taller, and they've got longer legs. For Ostman, it's more of the torso, and he's got very quick hands. We showed a video on Peter Report's Twitter account where he used a double swim move at the line of scrimmage against the tight end, and then at in the backfield against the blocking back, swim to get right around both of those guys,
yep,
in a heartbeat and get right to the quarterback.
Yep.
And Ostman's a guy that is tenacious. He is try hard. He's effort, but he's also technique. He's not the fastest guy. He's not the strongest guy. He's not the biggest guy, but he's got very interesting technique. And for a team, Trevor, whose leading sacker was Gerald McCoy with 6 sacks and who ranked dead last, you need as many pass rushers as you can get. We had the Buccaneers doubling up on pass rushers in this draft, in our first mock draft. And Joe Ostman might not be a bad guy to pick as the second defensive end on Tampa Bay's draft board, whether it be in the 3rd, 4th, 5th round, whenever it is.
Yeah, anytime somebody has that kind of production, I mean, you have to take notice because they're getting there. The thing with Ostman that popped out at me is that, like, he always had a plan. You know, like some rushers, even when they know how to do it all, they just don't have a plan, you know? I think Marcel Frazier is one of those guys. I see a lot of pass rush moves. He really knows how to get off blocks. Sometimes he has really good snap anticipation. And, like, all of that stuff is there with Marcel Frazier from Missouri, like you were saying. But It's like I'll watch him hit a spin move on an offensive lineman and it'll work, and then he just doesn't know what to do with it. Like he just there's no plan. It's just like hike, okay, I'm gonna spin or something. Yep. And it's just like Ostman, when he got up there, he knew exactly what pass rush move he was gonna do via where he was lined up, how far he was lined up, and how the offensive lineman was lined up.
Yeah.
He already knew what pass rush move he was going to do.
He had a game plan.
And how he was going to bait him.
Yes.
So having a game plan as a pass rusher is really important. And you're right. Ostman's body type makes it weird, makes the whole projection, everything weird. I don't think he's a starting defensive end in the NFL, but certainly, I mean, as we've seen
before,
I think he's
a wave pass rusher, though.
I mean, you just need a rotation of pass rushers that you can call upon at any time.
Right.
That's the way it is. Like, if you if your defense has been on the field for let's just say three straight third downs,
right,
and you just haven't quite gotten to them, and Noah Spence is gassed, and that third down is coming, put a guy like Osmond in. He's 100%.
Right.
He'll give you exactly what he needs. One play. That's
it. And you know what? The thing is, ideally what you want, Trev, is you want an A-caliber defensive end. You want a stud, grade A pass rusher. But then the problem is with the Buccaneers in years past, especially recently, they may have had an A. They may have had like a Michael Bennett in years past or whatever. But then the next guy in is a C.
Right, like such a drop-off.
Yes.
The Buccaneers have never been deep at the end.
Yep.
Ever.
Exactly. And so if you can get a guy like Osmond who's there, I think he's a B pass rusher. And, of course, the key is to find an A. And maybe for the Buccaneers that's Davenport. But I would really like to see the Buccaneers really bolster the pass rush to where you have an A and a B, or at the very least a B and a B, where there's not much drop-off. But to sit there and bring in Ryan Russell, who out of, what, 400 passing plays gets two sacks, you know, or Will Clark.
Yeah.
It's just this franchise, this team needs to do so much better, especially in the ultra-competitive NFC South with Drew Brees and Cam Newton and Matt Ryan.
Yeah. No, I'm with you. So those are probably our Shrine game, guys. Was there somebody else you wanted to mention?
Anybody else from the Shrine game that really stood out to you? You mentioned Worley, the Ohio State linebacker,
being
the best guy there.
Yeah,
they're stocked at linebacker.
They're not going to draft a linebacker. But, I mean, Mark Duffner was there the third day of the Shrine game. And, I mean, Chris Worley was just at that point.
He's a man among
boys.
He
knew he was the best player there.
Yeah.
And so, like, he was certainly showing it. And Duffner made a point to go up to him after the game, or the practice that we were at, and introduced himself to him and told him he had a hell of a practice, basically. So, I mean, that's kind of worth noting.
Well, you also liked the center there for
Michigan State. Brian Allen.
He showed very well in the game.
And afterwards, I heard that Brian Allen was like a borderline draftable player, and I was like, no. No. Brian Allen's like a fourth, fifth round pick, if you ask me.
Yeah.
And people were talking about him as like, oh no, it was on Mel Kiper's call. So Mel Kiper did that conference call, right, where he was just taking a couple of people from Michigan State, because Michigan State right now has a streak going of players drafted.
Right.
And they're like, is Brian Allen the best chance to keep the streak? And Mel Kiper was like, yeah, Brian Allen's probably the best to keep the streak. You know, it's a bit of a risk with him, though. I think he's probably a seventh round guy. He might go out and draft it. I'm like, are you serious? What? I thought Brian Allen was at like a fourth round pick, at least.
Well,
I thought he was great.
And you know what?
He's going to measure in at 6'1", but I don't care.
Yeah.
He uses leverage fine. If you're savvy with your leverage and you're a center, I'm all right with it.
Yeah. I don't think you've got to be huge in terms of being a center. You know, would you look at Tennessee's center, Ben Jones, for example, who was a very good run blocker at Georgia. Blocked for Knowshon Moreno. Also blocked for Matthew Stafford. This is a guy that is 28 years old, was a fourth-round pick out of Georgia from the Houston Texans, okay? And John Robinson, who I think has done wonders with the Tennessee Titans. Now, John Robinson, if you recall, was the protege of Jason Light. They're very good friends, and he left after 2015 to go become the Titans' general manager, and has worked wonders with that organization, getting them to the playoffs in back-to-back 9-7 seasons. Just hired Mike Vrabel, who honestly, my God, Trev, I think would have looked good in Tampa Bay as a head coach. Just me saying that.
Head coach, man.
Yeah.
Okay.
But Ben Jones is 6'3", 303, and that's not too far away from what Brian Allen is.
Brian Allen's probably like 6'2".
Yeah.
Probably right at 6'2".
Yeah, and so, I mean, this is a starting center for the Houston or for the Tennessee Titans. So again, I'm with you. I thought Brian Allen showed very well. So lots of offensive linemen here at the Senior Bowl. And the Buccaneers are going to be looking at both sides of the ball.
Mm-hmm.
One of the guys that caught my attention, and I follow Georgia closely. They're a fun team to watch, especially in the ground game. God, Trev, they go right from Todd Gurley to Nick Chubb to Sony Michel. I mean, just talk about the royalty of running backs. It's the Georgia Bulldogs lately. And when you look at Isaiah Wynn, their left tackle, 6'2", 303 pounds as a left tackle. And he is the most technically sound left tackle you'll find. Why? Because he has to be. He's 6'2", 303. He's going to transition into guard at the NFL. There's no way he's going to be an NFL tackle. But he will be a hell of a guard. He is technically sound. He gets right into his blocks ultra quickly. He's got quick hands, quick feet. He's got a strong punch. Uses great technique. Excellent in the pass game. Excellent in the run game. And he reminds me, without maybe the nastiness, but he reminds me technically of Logan Mankins. When Mankins came out of Fresno State, he was a left tackle in college. They moved him inside to guard. You know who else was a left tackle at college? Ali Marpet at Hobart College. They moved him to guard in the NFL. He's played exceptionally well. I would love to see the Buccaneers take a stab at Isaiah Wynn, who's playing in this game as a guard. And he played guard, I believe, as a sophomore and part of his junior year. Then they moved him to left tackle because he was the best offensive lineman. That's the biggest position of need, especially when you got a freshman quarterback like Jake Fromm for the Georgia Bulldogs. And Isaiah Wynn's a guy I'm going to be watching here. Are there any offensive linemen that have really, you know, caught your attention that you're really zoning in on this week?
Brian O'Neill, he's from Pittsburgh. He's a guy that I'm really intrigued about here at the Senior Bowl. Huge bodied guy. Was recruited to Pitt to play tight end, actually. And he played tight end for, I think, his first year or maybe his redshirt year, what they recruited him for. And then they put a bunch of weight on him. Put him at tackle. He played right tackle. Then he played left tackle. He's got really great feet and he moves really well because he was a former tight end. You know, he's just not he's not this stiff fat boy, you know, out trying to play left tackle.
He's an
just
athlete.
He's big. Right. He's an athlete playing left tackle. And so probably moves the best out of any tackle that's going to be here. A guy that I was really looking forward to that we don't get to see anymore. Chucky Okorafor from Western Michigan.
Yeah.
He is huge. He's like 6'7". Like 320, the dude just stands out on tape because he's a monster looking guy, but he moves really well for being so big. We don't get to see him anymore. I believe he had a minor injury that's going to keep him out, but he was another guy that I was looking forward to as an offensive lineman that was here. But those are probably my two big guys because they're really, like you said, the Buccaneers like to, wherever they're going to draft them, they like drafting tackles and then making them versatile, right? You gotta be able to play all the offensive line positions.
Yep.
So they would rather be comfortable with drafting a guy they know who could play tackle,
that's right,
teaching him the other stuff.
Yep.
So those are my two guys. I mean, I'm still looking forward to seeing O'Neal. I'm disappointed we can't see Okorafor.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about running backs. That's also a position of need. And there's a couple of guys here I wrote about in my latest SR's Fab Five that I think are dynamite. The first of which is Rashad Penny. I've been on Rashad Penny since just about the season opener this year. He was the backup to Donnell Pumphrey out there at San Diego State. Pumphrey, as you know, set the single season rushing record, I believe the career rushing record, at San Diego State, actually, and over 2,000 yards. And Penny actually had 1,000 yards as a junior as his backup. That's how good the San Diego State running game was. They had a 2,000-yard rusher in Pumphrey and a 1,000-yard rusher in Penny. Now, Penny made his money, his bread and butter, was kickoff returns his freshman and sophomore year as he earned time as a running back. And when he got the chance to be the show as a senior, he showed out. Over 2,000 yards, led the nation in rushing, broke Pumphrey's single-season school record with over 2,000 yards, and this guy can do it all. He can return punts for touchdowns, return kicks for touchdowns, catch touchdown passes, throw touchdown passes, rush for touchdowns, rush for 200 yards in a game. He is an absolute dynamo as a running back. 5'10", 220, he's built, he's fast. The big key for him, Trev, will be in pass protection. Is he a three-down running back, meaning he can run the ball on first and second down, and on third down he can catch passes out of the backfield, and he can also pass protect? Because just because you can play receiver on third down doesn't mean you're going to be the third down back, because you have to, when other teams are going to blitz, you might be called to, you know, an offensive audible here, hey, we need you to stay inside and pass protect, pick up that blitzing linebacker. That's something we're going to have to see if Rashad Penny can do this week. Mm-hmm. And I think if he does that, I think he's a surefire second-round pick.
No, I agree. Pass block. Yeah, I mean, pass blocking is a big thing for Penny. We already know what he can do when he's got the ball.
Yeah.
You know, he's a pretty special running back. I'm really looking forward to seeing Kalen Ballage, the running back from Arizona State, because he's a guy who's 6'3", 230. Was rumored to be an athlete at that kind of a size. Unfortunately, never saw it with the production. I don't think he gained more than 700 yards on the ground in any year that he was with Arizona State.
I actually coached his cousin, Kalen Ballage's cousin, Christian Ballage, on my Pop Warner South Pasco Predators team.
Huh. Really?
Yeah, and Christian Ballage is a hell of a running back, too.
Okay, well.
Following in his older cousin's footsteps.
No, yeah, I mean, Kalen shows some pretty great goal line capabilities, short yardage capabilities, but you just wonder, I mean, like, is this dude a feature back? Is he enough of an athlete to be a freak? And, I mean, like, if you're 6'3", 230, find out that he is a phenomenal athlete, then you're talking about a freak prospect.
Yeah, that's
right?
Like Derrick Henry size.
You're right. I mean, that's pretty incredible if we find out that he's that kind of an athlete. But I just have to think that, you know, if he really was, Arizona State wouldn't have kind of like kept him under wraps. You know what I'm saying?
At some point in time, he would have been a 1,000-yard running back.
That's what I'm thinking. Yeah. And I get that Arizona State does things a little bit differently. They kind of have a wacky offense, but I mean, I guess that's why he's here at the Senior Bowl. That's what we're looking to see. Is this guy a really great running back? Because I heard a lot of people in whispers before the season started that, hey, this guy is about to have a breakout season. They're about to make him actually the feature running back.
Yep.
I don't think they ever did. I don't think they made him the feature running back.
Nope.
I think they kept him with the same role.
Yeah.
So interesting to see him.
You know, the interesting thing, to bring it back to Rashad Penny, was he totally outshined Kalen Ballage when San Diego State upset Arizona State earlier in the season to really get kind of that landmark win for the program. And then Rashad Penny upstaged Bryce Love when San Diego State upset Stanford at home. And those were two big wins for the San Diego State program and two big showcases for Rashad Penny and what he could do. You mentioned Kalen Ballage, Trev. One of the other guys I'm looking forward to in the running back backfield is Ito.
Yeah.
Ito Smith, Southern Miss. Now, here's a Buck connection for you. Todd Monken, offensive coordinator, wide receivers coach for the Tampa Bay Buccaneers, was the coach at Southern Miss and recruited Ito Smith to the Golden Eagles program. That's his guy.
His tape is crazy.
It really is.
He is the human highlight reel.
Yeah.
Like the, you call it. Like that is
balance, vision, start stop ability, juking, you name it. He's
phenomenal,
got some breakaway
specialization
speed.
Running back, I think. Well, I think that's it. At least for now. That wraps up our Senior Bowl preview / Shrine Game recap podcast here.
Yeah. We're gonna be back on Thursday morning with another podcast, recapping a couple practices. We're going to talk to Bucks general manager Jason Light in between, have all of the recaps, the interviews from Media Day, which is on Tuesday, as well as the first practices. And be sure that you read Cover 3, Trevor Sikkema's latest column on Marcus Davenport. He's going to have some video breakdowns of what Davenport can do and what he can't do. And I've got the story from the press conference where Marcus Davenport talked about possibly going as high as number 7 to the Tampa Bay Buccaneers.
Yep. So we're going to have wall-to-wall coverage, if you will, here in Mobile, Alabama every single day, whether it's practices, press conferences, or whatever. So, yes. Scott's like holding his hand up like it's a class.
I would be remiss.
He's the only one in the room, and he's raising his hand to talk. You could just talk whenever you want.
I would be remiss if I didn't say that the PewterReport.com's Senior Bowl coverage is presented by Tampa Catering. For all of your Tampa Catering needs, call TampaCatering.com. Give them a call. Go on their website. They've got the perfect menu options for you for your wedding, for your corporate events, for your family get-togethers. Any catering needs you have, TampaCatering.com is the place to go.
Tampa Catering helping us give you all the Senior Bowl coverage you could possibly want. So, make sure you're checking in on PewterReport.com for all of the articles and updates that we're doing, as well as following us on Twitter, because we're going to be all over that all week as well. So until then, we'll see you next time on another edition of the Pewter Nation Podcast.
out